You're listening to An Introduction to the Catholic Life.
And welcome to An Introduction to the Catholic Life for episode 12. We are actually recording two back-to-back episodes here, so we've just listened to a wee bit of Scooter to get us psyched.
James is a big fan, really big fan. In fact, he went to see them a couple of years ago.
In Siberia?
That's where he sent a group message saying, oh, you really have to come, but we didn't really fancy it. Maybe next year.
Or you get the MSN.
Yeah, I wasn't great on MSN. No. I did do it, but yeah.
I was a bit of a legend on MSN.
Really?
No.
No, but do you know how like
I'm joking. No, I was a
all the wee
loser.
Things we say, the wee all the wee emojis and the wee gifts, like the original ones. But
everyone kind of left MSN at the same time. Everyone left it pretty quickly.
I know
Facebook.
What
Facebook
was it? Yeah, but it was just all of a sudden that
Bebo.
Overnight,
well, Bebo as well.
Bebo, yeah. But the thing is, as well, like remember you got added into those random group chats as well. Like you just be. Yeah. Sitting there and then all of a sudden it'd be like 55 people in a chat or something like that. Somebody's put them every day in your school.
I'm sure I spoke to folk in my school who I didn't actually ever speak to.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. On MSN.
That's quite common. Yeah. I've got them on MSN. I never spoke to them before in my life though.
It's awful. I mean, you often get just some bam saying, all right,
you up to. I got framed on MSN.
Framed?
I was framed for a crime, a heinous crime that I did not commit. So there used to be this, well, it wasn't quite MSN, it was a chat room that was called Paisley Schemes. Yeah. And do you remember that?
Yeah.
So basically there was a guy, might have been in your year actually, can't remember his name now. He posed as me and said...
Oh, on the chat, on the comments?
He posed as me, he said, I don't know why he chose my name at all, I was in first year.
That would get you battered if somebody...
Oh, well, this guy, this big guy, and I think your year came up to me and told me he was going to batter me. He was like, what were you saying to me on Paisley Schemes and all that sort of stuff? And I was like, I've never been on Paisley Schemes. What even is that? So, yeah, I don't know.
I wonder if that kind of thing happens now. Like, do young people still do that? Like, big gangs outside and all that? Like,
I don't know. I'm not down with the young people.
I would think so.
Yeah, I don't know.
They still get gangs, don't you?
Yeah, young but teams. I guess you do. I don't know if you get young teams. Like,
I know. I
don't know.
A lot of us used to fight the techie block. I don't know why.
What?
The techie block, so where the craft and design department was.
Aye.
That's where they always used to arrange to fight.
Oh, right, okay. Mm.
Don't know why. And I was told one lunchtime, I heard you fighting Gary. You know, 3:30 after school. At the techie block, and I thought, am I? that's not my diary. I have to put it in.
You should have just spoke Gaelic to them and be like, I don't know what you're talking about. Don't speak English.
I know, that's the thing, isn't it?
No, hablo inglés. I believe is the Gaelic.
I didn't show in the end.
It's one of those things we've been saying from the beginning that we were going to record two podcasts at a time so we wouldn't have to meet every week and do it. This is our first time doing it, though, isn't it?
No, second
time, isn't it?
Yeah. What did we do? Oh, we did. Is it Holy Week in? I can't remember. Anyway, that's cool. We've done two. That's fine. Yeah. We've done it before.
Yeah,
we'll get through it.
But I'm actually. I was just thinking there. We could be recording this now, and it might come out, and you could have had the baby by then as well.
Yeah. Oh wow! Oh, yeah,
that's true.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. Maybe yeah.
You actually could.
Scary.
Have a baby before the end of this podcast.
Yeah, you personally
you
could
personally.
Have a baby right now, Connor.
That's true. In between podcasts, Naomi came back home. She was out with her friend for dinner, and then the guys were saying she looks very pregnant, and she was saying that, you know, she could go anytime. So, scary.
Exciting. Scary.
As I was saying, I'm a bit of a walking contradiction at the moment, because I'll say one minute that I'm really terrified, and then one minute, actually, I just wanted her to come soon, so that she's here. So... Yeah, pray for me if you can. Pray for her. Pray for Naomi, especially the baby.
And that's a reveal as well. You know the baby.
It's a girl. Little girl.
Well, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. I don't know.
So, for episode 12, we are going to be discussing a topic that I think is quite difficult for a lot of people. It was one of the points put forward by St. Thomas Aquinas, actually, when he was looking at all the reasons to believe or not to believe in God, and he postulated this as the only reason that, or the one that makes the most sense comparatively, as to why someone might not believe in God. So we're going to be talking about the problem of evil. If an all-good, all-powerful, and all-knowing God exists, then why does evil exist? He's all-knowing, so he knows that evil is taking place. He is all-good, and so surely he would want this evil not to exist. And he's all-powerful, so he has the power to stop it. So whence then comes evil? This is a problem. We believe in an all-good God, but yet evil exists. How does this happen? And this has been a great problem faced that many Catholic theologians have faced throughout the ages. There's actually a theological term for proving that God exists, even though evil exists, and that is theodicy. Theodicy. Not to be confused with theodicy by Homer.
The Odyssey.
Different from theodicy.
True. Not to be confused.
Okay.
Sorry.
I never got confused till you just said that. There was absolutely no confusion there for me.
When I first Google searched theodicy, it auto-corrected it to the Odyssey.
Oh, right, okay. The Odyssey.
The Odyssey. Anyway, how do we reconcile these two things? There are distinctions to be made in what exactly evil is and what evil is not. So there are two forms we would recognise of evil, or two ways it plays out, and that would be moral evil and natural evil. Moral evil, we would say, is caused by decisions that we directly make. Natural evil is something more akin to, say, an earthquake or a natural disaster. And we need to think of, well, why would God allow these things to exist? Why do they exist in this world created by a good God? Why would he have a reason for doing this? And then we also need to think about, well, what actually is, yes, we've got the two forms, what actually is evil itself, which St. Augustine spoke about? So I'll open the floor for some opening thoughts.
I think the real power behind this objection or this debate around the problem of evil is because in many ways it's almost like it's a vernacular discussion, in the sense that it uses common terms. Everyone can engage in this. It's not philosophers necessarily that are harking on about this, but actually people in the grassroots. We've all experienced evil and suffering in our life to greater or lesser extents. And so even someone who has not read any philosophy in their life can think about this as a problem in theism, or as something that needs to be overcome or at least addressed, because it comes from our natural experience. We know that evil exists, and we you know that. I think that's really the real power behind it, and we see that why it's brought up again and again and again, even though I think the Catholic faith, that you said, through the centuries has given good responses to it, it still keeps coming back because it's from that grassroots. People experience evil all the time.
And it's interesting, actually, what's just popped into my head is something not related to the topic, but related to that idea that everyone can engage with it. Do you remember the pictures that circulated of the famous blue and black or white and gold dress?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Remember that? I found that interesting that so many people were like absolutely infatuated by that. They couldn't, you know, everyone was like, oh no, I'm seeing it this way, I'm seeing it that way. People tend to, and it's an interesting kind of characteristic in human beings, we tend to share on things that we ourselves experience. I mean, I thought that was a very good example of everyone can have an opinion on this, and so people were attracted to it. And similarly, this question, as you're saying there, it's very common. It's very common in our day-to-day experience, from waking up to going to sleep every single day, we will experience, to a greater or lesser extent, evil.
Do you know, it was actually one of my cousins that took that picture of the dress in question.
Was that?
It was actually, yeah.
No way.
And she got a trip to Dubai out of it as well with her friend.
That's
to who the dress belonged. And yeah, it's a small world.
That's funny.
Something went viral, yeah. I'll show you later on. yeah, so she took the picture and her friend had bought the dress, and immediately came up on the picture that it was a different colour. But something which is a common strand when it comes to the question of evil, irrespective of whether we consider that question today or considered it hundreds of years ago. Everyone has some sort of reaction to that which is evil. And to be quite frank, it's entirely commonsensical. How can you not but be moved by the scenes of tragedy falling, for argument's sake, the earthquake in Haiti, or Hurricane Katrina, or tsunami, for instance, as well in Asia, or the Boxing Day tsunami, or even actions which are imposed or inflicted on human beings by other human beings. I think of the Islamic State phenomenon, or going to the extreme examples of the 20th century, that those evil, cruel acts committed by Nazi Germany, by the Soviet Union, and so forth. What do they have in common? Well, irrespective of where you're from, who you are, what your cultural context is, you have some sort of reaction. You have some sort of reaction generally against that what's happening. Not always, but generally you have a reaction against that which we objectively identify as being evil. That's a common theme right across human history, irrespective of where we are, who we are, where we're from, and so on and so forth, in which particular year we find ourselves. When something which is bad happens, we react to it. And that, I think, is an indication that it's a common theme, for sure, in human history, but also there's a reason behind it. And we have to get to the bottom of that reason in order to understand better how then to cope with it when it does indeed happen in our individual lives.
Yeah, and those things do move us. Those different, we look at last century, particular things like the Holocaust, everyone knows what that is, and everyone realises and recognises that that is evil. For many people, certainly that I've spoken to, when you bring up things like that, they would come out with something like, well, you know, this terrible, terrible thing has happened. How can God allow such a world to go on? And that gets back to the original question, you know, how does evil exist? And one big thing that people don't take into account when they look through that original argument, you know, if God is all-knowing, all-good, all-powerful, why does he allow it to exist? One thing they tend to, or a lot of people tend to overlook, is the fact that God might have, and we need to think about this seriously, God might have a very good reason for allowing evil to exist. And that is, I think, why so many people have a big problem with this, because we're human beings. We look at things subjectively. If someone next door to us gets robbed, we're not really thinking about the moral implications of all involved. We're just thinking, I'm scared that I'm going to get robbed next. We tend to think about things very subjectively. Looking at things objectively is very, very difficult. And that's why the problem of evil is such a muddy one, because it is confused with a lot of subjective opinions and emotions, when really, and those things obviously do need to be accounted for, obviously. We're not just saying, yeah, this is just a scenario which we need to resolve on paper. Suffering is a reality for people, and we need to obviously stop that and help people through difficult times where possible. But the fact that it exists doesn't exclude the possibility of an all-loving, all-good, all-knowing God. And that idea that there's a good reason that God has allowed it to exist is one that we're going to be looking at in today's podcast.
I often think the question, as you say, what could be this good reason that can come from that? If you look at it from the perspective of what love is, or what love should be, and that God loves us and God wants our love, but he wants that freely. And I think if you we'll often hear love is love, and that's it. There's no more to that. There's no actual depth to what that actually means, for the meaning behind real, true love. And I think there's so many different parts of what love is, but part of that is that it has to be freely chosen and freely given, and not forced
coerced
upon anyone. Yeah, exactly. So God has to allow us that choice to choose what is good, what he is. A real aspect of love is shown clearer in difficult circumstances, in difficult times, in times of sacrifice, etc. You see a real deep love coming through in very sad circumstances, I think. So, you know, there's lots of opportunities to see
a greater good, yeah, really, isn't it?
And that's really where it gets the conversation going. Unless we understand and define what the good, what love is correctly, we can't possibly understand what evil is. How can you? If evil, or that which is bad, that which is evil, is an absence of the good, then how can you possibly define it unless you, first of all, understand what authentic goodness is, what authentic love is? And once we understand that correctly, then we see concrete, practical examples of what it is to live virtuously, to live a good life, even in the most horrific circumstances. We've already referenced numerous saints, Saint Teresa of Calcutta, Saint Maximilian Kolbe, individuals who lived in the most horrific circumstances, be it with respect to absolute destitution or the very depths of human behaviour, and yet who emerged in an aura of sanctity. And we can say that with faith, we can say that with truth for sure. But unless we understand what sanctity, goodness, what love is, as you're saying, James, then we can't really understand what evil is either.
I think, what is evil when there's no objective truth? I mean, I always think that atheists in some way get themselves into a trap there, because they're talking about what evil is, but actually, if they don't believe in objective truth, if they don't believe in objective good and evil, then how can they determine what is actually evil? It's all subjective. And get back to what you were saying, James, about that. You know, I think it's the alternative would be that God is essentially a dictator, an authoritarian dictator who jumps in every time anything bad's going to happen and stops it happening to you. And I guess that you need to get back to the ultimate point of, well, why as theists, as Christians, why do we believe God created the earth? Why did he create the cosmos? And he did that so that he could get as many people as possible to be saved, to join him in heaven. And so we would need to work out whether or not, you know, can you argue that maybe this is the best way to do it? Maybe allowing evil to some extent is the best way to get people to follow him freely, like you're saying.
And that phrase, allowing evil, is an important one, actually, because there's a big, you know, people say, you know, God causes earthquakes, God causes evil. But Rory also mentioned another important phrase, and that is, you know, that evil is the absence of the good. Those are both two very important things that we need to bear in mind when we're thinking about what evil is and what is God's role in evil things going on. And his role is exactly, for moral evil certainly, is exclusion. Because choices are being made which are directly in contradiction or in contrast with God's own nature. God's own nature is goodness itself. God is a good and loving God. And he cannot cause evil to exist, because that would be a contradiction in his own nature. So God doesn't cause evil to exist, but he does allow it to exist, but it is for that greater good. Love, as he said, as James has said, love must be free. And there's two options in that freedom. You know, the gift of free will is such a radical one, and it's such a misunderstood one, I think. But it really does give us the power to influence our own eternal destiny, I suppose. And that is by doing good or from doing evil.
I think something does fundamentally change whenever you encounter evil. I think people would realise, we all know people who have in some way suffered and they've been changed by that, you know, the reality of that your life could just, you know, we could just drop dead, or something really bad could happen to us, either any of us tonight, and your life would be fundamentally changed by that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that is, you know, the end, because as Christians we believe that's only a small thing in the grand scheme of eternity. You know, so for a small amount of suffering in this short life on earth, the joy of everlasting life is going to far outweigh any of that suffering. So if you look at things only in your short earthly life, then of course you can say, well, I've lived my whole life in suffering and that's really bad. But if you look at it in the way God would look at it, in terms of eternity with him, that if that short period of suffering in eternity is what drives you to go to him and to love him and then to do it freely with free will, then that is all worth it in the end. And we need to say that, like you said, it's hard to say that in amongst suffering, especially when we can all think of ourselves and loved ones who are suffering. But actually, if you think objectively about it, that makes sense. You know, we have that saying all the time, don't we? Like, a little bit of pain and then it will be over. That kind of idea that, you know, like sometimes you need to do things which are painful in order to get through it, but you know, mm-hmm. that getting through it will get to the end. You know, there's something good that's going to come from that. Childbirth, for example.
Exactly.
You know, childbirth, you know, like a woman goes into childbirth knowing, okay, this is going to be really pretty sore, pretty painful, I'm going to suffer quite a bit. Things could go mm-hmm. either way. But they know that at the end there's going to be something that happens,
yeah.
and that's going to be so much joy, and that's going to be worth it. And so as Christians, as Catholics, that's how we view suffering, in the sense that mm-hmm. we're all called to suffer, we're all called to carry our cross, but ultimately there will be something in the end which is worth it, and it's more than this world can offer.
Uh-huh. But some ways of life are intrinsically more capable of coping with suffering and with evil than others. I remember a few years ago I was in Latin America. I was in Ecuador during the time of preparation for Holy Week, and the local parish in Ecuador was a coastal town. They were holding their rehearsals for the Via Crucis play during Holy Week, and lo and behold, shockingly, there was suddenly a tsunami warning. There was an earthquake off the coast of Chile, and the countries of Chile, Ecuador and Colombia all received tsunami warnings, and the advice was clear the coast, get yourself into high land. And for sure some did that, for sure some did, but these individuals, and it wasn't a small number either, it was just an authentic parish community in the coast of Ecuador who were practicing their Via Crucis. They almost laughed it off. They just had such a, I wouldn't say quite dismissive, but it was a very profound understanding of the inevitable, which was to come. And that is that all things have to be put into an eternal context. As it turned out, that tsunami wave didn't emerge as was expected, but these people didn't know that at the time. Goodness, I didn't know it. And I must confess, it's one of the few times in my life in which I've actually felt, during which I've actually felt terrified. I really did not know what to expect. Mm-hmm. You have these images in your head of what this is going to look like. But it really, really helped to be surrounded by a group of Catholics, a group of individuals who prayed daily and who had an eternal perspective when it came to questions of good and evil. They didn't live in easy day-to-day circumstances. My goodness, a lot of them lived in destitution, and they had that to contend with already. And some of the Legion of Mary groups did a really wonderful group, did a wonderful job of going through the homes and visiting the sick and so forth in this particular town. And then when they were confronted with natural evil, similarly, it was a very serene approach, a very serene answer, which is the correct answer to anything which is evil. I thought it was a very admirable witness in many ways to the life, death and resurrection of Christ.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, if you think about in our modern civilization, where we're literally, as a culture, as the current generation, we're trying to get as far away as possible from suffering as we can. If you think about 100 years ago, people suffered in their daily lives a lot more than we do. You know, the suffering was real to people, real to families, real to people growing up, a lot more than it is now. We're actually living quite a good life because of advances in science and technology and these sorts of things. And of course, suffering still exists, but we're a lot more sheltered. And in fact, everything we do as humanity seems to be trying to get further away from more suffering to lessen that amount of suffering. And that's the thing. So I think whenever you hear modern people in the media talking about the problem of evil as if it's some sort of torpedo that's going to sink theism, sink Christianity, and like this is going to destroy it. It's from their kind of comfy armchairs when they're talking about, Catholics throughout the centuries have been living and suffering, and since our Lord himself suffered in his life, he didn't have a comfy, cushy life. And it's, so I think sometimes it's seen as a kind of thing where, at least in my opinion, I think something's presented, some like Christians don't think about this, and it's like something that's just totally going to destroy their whole arguments and everything. It's like, look, there's this thing called evil, as if we're going to go, oh yeah, didn't know about evil. Oh no, that's completely, the church has completely not answered that for 2,000 years, and nobody's ever suffered. I just think it's a bit silly.
Mm. And it's funny the attitudes we have sometimes, particularly the attitudes of atheists towards the likes of suffering. When you said the example of childbirth, I thought that was actually quite interesting. It got me thinking. There's quite a lot of kind of things in society, and there's one that's pertinent to me and James at the moment, actually, where...
I'm interested now, I'm listening.
Me too.
But there's one thing in particular which is quite interesting, and people, they would say, suffering is bad, you should avoid suffering at all cost. And there's this idea that suffering is always bad. Now, we are body and soul, and in the catechism we're told to take more care of our soul than body, but we have to take care of our body as well. But it got me actually thinking about exercise. Now, it's quite interesting. Exercise, me and James were talking about in the gym recently, causes pain. Suffering, you could say. Now, very trivial example, maybe, but people will go through a lot of pain, a lot of suffering to get their bodies in shape. But the idea of going through suffering and it producing a positive effect in your soul is somehow so, so alien to society, which is very, very happy to accept it for the body, which I just thought was quite interesting. But often we don't think about the fact that, yes, there is suffering, yes, it's difficult to deal with, but is it going to bring around that greater good? It does in the case of exercise for its part, and yes, it can as well, as Rory gave that example in Ecuador, you know, it can give this spiritual benefit. And it's something that's very easy to lose sight of. We're in the midst of great suffering, and people will be able to testify to that themselves.
I think whenever I first encountered the problem of evil or suffering, my life was really probably concretely when my grandfather died. And so I often think back at that now, because I think at the time I could have, and I was saying, you know, how would you allow my grandfather, you know, God, why did he die? He was, you know, in his early 60s, and how did you allow it to happen? If you love me, why would you do that? But in hindsight now, you know, 8 years later or so, I can say that actually that had a massive positive effect in my life, because it actually made me think about eternity and what the Catholic faith meant, everything to him, and it meant nothing to me at the time. It made me think about these things. Mm-hmm. And so actually looking back at my own experience, I can say, well, that did actually have a massive positive impact on me. And if you think about that in terms of eternity then, if you want to do that, him dying that way, that, please God, has made me take my faith more seriously, and please God, I'll one day, through the good grace of God, I'll make it to heaven, and then please God, my family does, and my children, and these sorts of things. So you can see how it can easily kind of spread out from one act of seeming evil, you know, seemingly mm-hmm. evil act, that you could say, why has God allowed this to happen? Actually, the kind of repercussions of that could be, in the grand scheme of things, something which is massive.
There's a trend in culture and society to define an individual according to his or her circumstances, whereas the Catholic faith would always, always insist on the fact that you are never defined by your circumstances, you are defined by how you respond to the circumstances, and that is something which is so, so, so important, particularly when it comes to the most difficult things which life might well throw at you, be it family illness, be it depression, be it natural disasters. You can never be defined by something which you cannot control, but you can certainly control how you respond to it. And that is really the making of the saints in every walk of life. And that's not something which really should be removed from any individual today at all.
I think the example of Christ is just so important for this topic. I think, you know, when you're talking about that, how he reacted to the worst circumstances, betrayal, being put on trial, you know, you think about the passion narrative, you know, answering questions serenely, taking it on, and also taking on the full weight of human sin, and then dying for us. You know, I think that sort of image of suffering shows a real true love, and I think going through that, you know, highlights that to us.
We find God in suffering, exactly, and you know, Connor said, you know, you haven't thought of the problem of evil yet. Look at a crucifix. You know, that's been the emblem from the beginning. You know, that was where the church was born. The church was born, you know, some say, you know, from the wellsprings of life came from the side of Christ. And you know, no matter what suffering anyone experiences in that life, Christ has come down to earth and experienced that suffering as well. And we can find him there. And it's interesting because no matter where, why, how, or whatever we live our lives, no matter what time we were born in, we will never be able to avoid suffering completely. We may do our very best. You know, there's hedonism, this kind of idea that you should avoid suffering at all costs and just pursue pleasure. It's not possible. We will find suffering, whether it be great suffering, mild suffering, or whatever. But Christ is in that. The church can be found in that. And it's very easy to look at suffering, look at the destitution, and just despair. And just think, a good God could not allow this. You know, life is meaningless. I can imagine if you came across great suffering, it might be easy to think something like that. But again, it's this tendency that we have to be very subjective. We don't see as God sees. God has a much, much bigger plan. Connor, your grandpa dying. And that's an interesting one, actually, because a lot of people, death gets a lot of people thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the things that we consider to be very bad at the time turn out to be sometimes the best thing that ever happened to us. I know a guy who went through a really, really tough time, with work and all the rest of it, and everything in his life was just going down the drain, really. And I kind of met him 6 months later, maybe it was longer than that. And after all the suffering he'd went through, he said it was the best thing that ever happened to him, and his faith had never been stronger. And
I remember that.
Oh, you were there as well, yeah, that's right.
But the one thing he said was the suffering that he had went through, he was like, I couldn't have went through anything more. As in, there was literally nothing else that could have happened to him that could have made it any worse.
Yeah.
And he was like, and I still had my faith. And at the end of it, he said, he couldn't believe it. It was amazing how your faith can withstand that. Mm-hmm. That stuck in my mind anyway.
I think that's the thing, wasn't it? Like, when you've got nothing left in terms of materialism, then you just have to cling to the cross, in a sense. You know, then it forces, and that's a common thing. People feel like they have to just, they've got nothing left apart from Christ, and they cling to him. And I think as well, when it's this argument's often portrayed, especially in the media and these sorts of things, it paints the idea, or it creates this narrative that somehow Christians, Catholics, believe in some sort of God who's sitting up there quite indifferent, looking down on the suffering that's going on. But of course, as Catholics, we know that it's not, God is there weeping with us. You know, you think about the Gospels of Christ weeping over the death of his friend Lazarus. You know, God, who exists, is not sitting up there looking down at you and your suffering, thinking that's a shame. He's actually down there with you, crying with you, and supporting you through that. And that's, I think, something which the Catholic Church can do, because we can tackle this, and the Church has tackled this through the centuries as a philosophical problem. But also, the Church is the largest charitable organisation in the world, the last time I checked. So we, you know, it's on the ground with people who are suffering as well. So this is not a problem that any Catholic should be scared of, I don't think.
Absolutely. And the greater good, you know, does come out of this. I don't want to sound too utilitarian when I'm saying that, but, you know, there's what we've spoken about so far, you know, this, the different types of suffering we've got, you know, moral evil and natural evil. And moral evil, yes, we've said, you know, free will accounts for moral evil. And natural evil as well, you know, it's easy, yeah, it's easy to just view it in despair and all the rest of it. But I was just thinking of a wee example there, it's another one where you might say, you know, how could God justify this? And particularly in a kind of 21st century Western society, this is portrayed to be the worst thing that could happen to a young couple. So, young couple expecting a baby, the baby's diagnosed with Down syndrome, say. Now, if you lived in Iceland, you'd be in the tragic country where 100% of children diagnosed with Down syndrome in the womb are aborted. But the couples that do go ahead to have, say, a Down syndrome child, which you could say, yeah, it's a natural evil insofar as there's a chromosomal disorder in the child. Actually, the lives of the parents, and often all the family, are absolutely transformed by the gift of these people. Things that we would at first maybe say, oh yeah, these are evil, these are bad things. Yeah, a diagnosis of Down syndrome in the womb is bad. Actually, sometimes these elicit the best parts of human nature, and the parts of human nature we actually wouldn't get a glimpse of if there was only good in the world. You know, there's this idea that you don't know the light without the dark. And some of the best people, some of the most heroic people I have ever met in my life have been, you know, the parents of disabled children, because the selflessness and the love that they show in their day-to-day lives in dealing with those situations really shows you, you know, that's how we respond to the problem of evil.
It's because everything works in relation to God. We can only tell that which is dark according to its relation to that which is light. And a simple analogy might well be a colour chart. You can only tell the colour maroon in its relation to red, and pink in relation to red, and so on and so forth. It's quite a simple equation in some ways. We are relational beings. Our morality also has a relationship to God, that which is objectively good, and everything is to be measured against that. That was true many years ago, it's true now. It's an eternal truth.
Amen.
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 the problem of evil is quite often, I think there's a distinction, isn't there? There's the kind of the logical problem of evil in which philosophers can back and forth talk about it and trying to philosophically argue against each other and theologically as well. But then the emotional side is the most persuasive, and that seems to be in the most contemporary examples of it being brought into the culture, where I'm sure everybody had their face in their Facebook feed, they had Stephen Fry's video. That was purely emotive, in the sense if you watch it again, I think I'll try not to get emotional about this, I'll just watch it and see what he's actually saying. All he's just trying to make people emotional to get angry, and he's obviously just annoyed at God for whatever reason. He doesn't want, his problem isn't necessarily with evil, it's just that he doesn't like the idea of God.
And again, it's Rory said earlier on, it's not what situation we're in, it's how we respond to it. And he is obviously seen or heard of, I mean, obviously he's very, very comfortable, very, very, lives a very comfortable life, I'm sure.
Yeah, but imagine he's suffered though as well.
So of course, everyone has.
It's a reaction to that. I think it's...
But the examples he uses certainly are...
Yeah, but I think those are just examples, but it comes from a place, I think it's all personal.
But certainly it's not his situation, but it's how he's responded to it that's defining it. And if you respond to things and say, and you despair and you give up on God and you think, well, a good God couldn't allow this, I'm not going to believe in you. If you do exist, I don't like you. If that's your response, then I'm very sorry to hear that, because that is not the response that will bring us to eternal happiness with God. The response we do need to have is the one that Job had in the Bible. When terrible things came his way, he trusted in God. Connor said it earlier on. When terrible things come our way, cling to the cross. And if we do that, we can be rest assured that we will enter into eternal bliss, where there is no pain, there is no suffering, and there is only God and happiness. So these are our thoughts on that difficult subject. It's always difficult to know actually how to kind of wrap up one of the podcasts on the kind of heavier subjects.
I think we often get to the end of podcasts just because we realise the timestamp, we realise we're getting to the end of the time. We realise that editing's hard when you've got hours and hours of content. But actually, we could probably keep talking about it for a long, long time yet.
Well, it's the solemnity of the ascension of our Lord. So
today it is, yeah.
We hope that our suffering and the problem of evil will get us to heaven with him. Maybe we'll ascend.
Indeed.
Is that profound?
Amen.
Whenever James dies, he's going to ascend to heaven.
I can't wait to ascend. Amazing.
That reminds me of that, you know, the it's people attending heaven, you know, in the Sistine Chapel you have the Last Judgment painting, and there's like the people coming out of the grave ascending up, but then they're getting like beaten down by like angels, like, you're not coming up. There's like, imagine you know, you're coming out of the grave and you start going up, rising up, rising up, rising up, and then the Last Judgment, and then the angels are hitting you back down again.
That's what it'd be like. You used to be trying to pull me up, with you, and the demons will be setting me down.
They'll ask, why did you squash that cheese that night?
I'm sitting here actually squashing
squashing really nice cheese.
A quarter of a bit of cheese.
Sad. Okay.
Sorry. But that's all part of it. Just suffering, Sean, you need to
profound.
Yeah.
I'm gonna
See, actually at the start of this podcast, when you started talking about the problem of evil, all I could think about was how do you solve a problem like Maria? So, like, for about the first 5 minutes I was just sitting here not saying anything. Singing that in my head.
I think, what do you think? I think we should maybe at one point have a call in.
A what?
A call in, get people to call Sean's number to be live on the show.
I think we should do, I'm not joking, I think we should do a live Q&A on Facebook.
No.
No, like, we could have like some pre-prepared questions from like maybe people that message the page. If you've got a question to ask us for our live Q&A, please send it to Rory.
Are we actually doing this?
Maybe.
What?
I'm just putting ideas out there, guys.
Trying to
move the podcast forward, you know, get with the times, that kind of thing, you know.
Sowing seeds.
Sowing seeds, yeah. But nonetheless, you can contact us on social media.
Yep, all the usual. You can get us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, download our stuff from iTunes, and our website and our email, which you can find.
I added James on LinkedIn the other day.
Oh, did you?
Did you? Oh.
It was maybe actually the other week.
Thanks.
I gave you a recommendation for.
You gave me a wave podcasting on Facebook. So.
Really? For skills on podcasting, did you actually?
If I haven't, I'm going to.
You should. You should.
I think it's a great podcast. I think it's great what you're doing.
thanks very much, Rory. That's made my night, actually.
It's not very often you get a compliment from Rory, so that's pretty good.
I know.
It's a blue moon.
I thought you were going to say, like, you gave me a recommendation for, like, Excel spreadsheet work or something like that. Thanks, man.
I would give you a recommendation for making microwave meals. You know well.
So, thanks again for tuning in. We hope you've enjoyed our discussion today. If you've got any questions, please do send us them through our social media or email, if that is your medium. And we hope you've enjoyed today's chat, and we'll hope to hear from you all very soon. Here's to the pint, the mic and the cross. Cheers, lads.
See ya.
I'm in. Really?